find someone cheaper to replace talent who he felt made too much money. He was good at what he did, and he would be watching Blaze like a hawk. As if she didn't have enough problems at the moment. She looked panicked when she told Mark about Zack Austin. "I hear he's a real son of a bitch," Mark said in a whisper, as though the walls had ears now. "No one is safe with him running things." He had come from the entertainment division, and Blaze was afraid he'd be looking to jazz things up, possibly with talent closer to his age. Blaze looked nervous. Even in her position, no one was ever totally secure at the network. She made more money than any on-air talent, and if he could replace her with someone cheaper, younger, and whom he considered as good, there was no question that he would. She was a big target, and she had the distinct feeling that Zack Austin would be gunning for her. Blaze was a nervous wreck by the time she got home that night, and Simon could see that she looked strained. He made another delicious dinner, although simpler than the one the night before, since he knew Blaze was careful about what she ate. He made a simple saffron risotto, roast chicken, green beans, and fruit salad, and they ate it all. And she lingered for a moment when he was cleaning up. Salima had gone to her room for something and wanted to sing with him again, and he had taken her to Ellis Island that day. He thought she should write a paper on it for school, for her American history class. Blaze was pouring herself a cup of tea from a chamomile infusion he had made, and he glanced over at her. "Are you okay?" he asked her, worried that he was crossing a line. But she looked anxious and distracted all through dinner. She started to nod, and then decided to be honest. "No, I'm not. They brought in a new head of the news division who doesn't know anything about the news. He's from the entertainment side of the business. We'd all better get out our tap shoes." Simon looked stunned by her answer. "Are you kidding? You're Blaze McCarthy. You're a legend all over the world. People in the desert on camels know who you are." She shrugged. "Maybe, but the network's not as impressed as you or the camels are. They always figure we're replaceable, and they're always looking for someone younger and cheaper. I cost them a fortune. And they don't give a damn about Blaze McCarthy, the legend. As long as they sign the checks, they call the shots. As someone once said to me, it's the golden rule. He who has the gold rules. And they do. I'm just hired help as far as they're concerned. There's nothing secure in this business, and the longer I'm in it and the older I get, the greater the chance they'll get rid of me sooner or later. In fact, they're grooming someone to knock me out of my spot now. She's just not ready yet, or I'd be collecting unemployment, or doing stories about dog shows for the 4 a.m. news." Simon looked horrified. In his mind, she was a star. In hers, she had to fight all the time. And she knew it was true. It had the ring of truth to him, too, and opened his eyes to the stress she lived with every day. He had been convinced that being as famous as she was meant that you never had to worry, that she was safe. Instead, she had to worry even more. He wondered if she had to worry about money, too, and hoped not for her sake. But it was obvious she depended only on herself. There was no one else around. And somehow, listening to her, he realized that being a star was not enough. It was a lonely, scary life, and he wouldn't have traded places with her for anything in the world. For all the glory and so-called glamour, she still had a kid who needed special attention that nothing would fix and was trying to give her a good life. There was no one there to help her, and she had no partner and was alone, and she lived with constant stress at work. He was glad he didn't have her job, and he had greater respect for her now after what she'd just said. At least he could be there for Salima. He gave Blaze a sympathetic look, and she smiled at him with a weary expression as Salima walked in and told him to hurry up. She wanted him to play piano for her again. She'd had fun the night before, and she didn't realize that he'd been having a serious conversation with her mother. He left the kitchen with Salima a minute later. And hearing them from her room a little later, Blaze closed her eyes and listened to her daughter singing in her beautiful, pure voice. She was singing old Barbra Streisand songs, and then switch to gospel songs, which Blaze always loved. And all Blaze could hope was that Zack Austin never found a reason to fire her, and no one else would take her place. She wished that Simon was right, and she was untouchable because of who she was. But who she was, and how big she was, put her that much more at risk. The top was a lonely place to be, in a life that wasn't perfect at all. And Simon had just gotten a glimpse of that for the first time. Most people never knew. Not surprisingly, Blaze couldn't sleep that night and decided to work late. Concentrating on her work always calmed her. She was doing early research for several political profiles she wanted to pitch to Charlie. And with Zack Austin watching her now, the heat was on. She had to be even better than she had been to justify her existence and hold her own, although the ratings still loved her. But with changes in management, you never knew. She finished at 2 a.m. and was making herself a cup of warm milk when Simon heard her and walked in. He was still dressed, too. Blaze smiled at him as she poured the milk into a mug. At that hour, tired, she looked vulnerable and younger than she was. And he looked tired, too. He had been reading old emails from Meg, wondering how he had gotten into such a mess, sacrificed his integrity, and done something he knew was wrong. She was a married woman, and despite her promises that she didn't keep, he had gone on. To him, loving her seemed like a poor excuse. He knew better than to do what he'd done, and this was the first time he'd gotten involved with a married woman. "You and Salima sound great together," she complimented him, as she sat down at the kitchen table and he smiled. "If all else fails, we can open a restaurant and nightclub. You cook, the two of you sing after dinner, and I can wait on tables," she teased, and he laughed. At least she had a sense of humor about it, but he could see that she was worried and exhausted. "That'll never happen. They may give you a tough time, but they'd be suicidal to get rid of you. You're an icon." "Even icons get fired. If my ratings ever slipped, I'd be dead meat in about 5 minutes." "That's a hell of a way to live," he commented. "The fast lane. It comes at a high price." "Is it worth it?" he asked her, honestly, curious about her. He liked how straightforward she was with him and about everything. He had the feeling that he could ask her anything, and she'd tell the truth. He had judged her well. It was why she and Harry were still friends. She was a woman eminently worthy of respect. "Sometimes it's worth it," she said, looking thoughtful. "I love what I do. It's exciting. I guess it's glamorous, which isn't why I do it. Maybe I love the challenge. I've had fun doing it for a lot of years. I don't like the insecurity anymore or the pressure. It's like playing Russian roulette every day. But the highs are pretty high. It's addictive." "I don't think I could do it," he said thoughtfully. "In fact, I know I couldn't. I don't like risk. I'm not a gambler, and I like a quiet life. And I don't like playing by other people's rules. My parents taught me that. My father is an inventor, and he taught me to think outside the box. And my mom is pretty out there, too. They're both eccentric. But thinking outside the box is why I do what I do. I teach kids not to accept limitations of any kind. If they can dream it, they can do it. My father taught me that." "But why at Caldwell?" she asked. She was curious about him, too. He was so smart to be buried away in a small school in Massachusetts. She thought he was capable of more. "I don't know. It's easy, comfortable. I'd like to work at a bigger school, like Perkins in Massachusetts outside Boston, or one of the big schools for the blind here in New York, like the Institute for Special Education. I kind of got stuck at Caldwell. I got involved with someone and didn't want to leave. I haven't started to resolve it until now. I was trapped. I think this break with Caldwell closing for a while is what I needed." "You got involved with someone at the school?" He nodded. "Another teacher. She's married with 3 kids. She said she was getting divorced, and instead of waiting for her to do it, I jumped the gun. I knew better. But I was lonely. She was bored. I hadn't been in a relationship for a while, and I fell madly in love with her. 3 years later, she's still married and has 1,000 reasons not to leave him. It goes against everything I believe. I can't do it anymore. I just told her. Maybe she'll leave him now, she said, thinking about Andrew. But he hadn't left his wife when she broke it off. She still believed that if he had loved her, he would have. Some people just never leave. They get away with what they can for a while, and then do it again with someone else. I did something like that myself. She was honest with him, and he looked at her intrigued. I knew it was wrong, too. Same story. Only he lied to me and said he was in the process of divorce. He wasn't. He just lied. And I believed him for a year. Then the house of cards came down when I found out he'd lied. I broke it off, and I figured he'd leave her then and clean it up. He never did. He's still with her 4 years later. He still calls sometimes, and I talk to him. I know I shouldn't, but there's no one else. So I talk to him anyway, and he makes me feel like shit all over again. Some people have a real knack for doing that. She looked at him ruefully, and he smiled. I hate the dishonesty, Simon said, looking pained. She lies to him, she lies to me. How can you have a relationship built on lies? You can't, she answered for him. I tried. And I thought he was honest with me, but he wasn't, which is maybe a little worse. But either way, the lies catch up with you in the end. I learned a hell of a lesson, and I haven't dated anyone since. I don't even miss it. And then she corrected herself with a thoughtful look. That's not true, actually. I do miss it, and even him, sometimes. But I don't miss the pain of what we had or the price to pay. I wouldn't do something like that again. Neither would I, Simon said. You don't miss having someone in your life? I do. Just not him. And I've always been in love with my work. That helps. Probably too much so. Whenever there was a choice to make about priorities, I picked work. I feel guilty about it for Salima, but she's very forgiving and seems to accept me as I am. It's the way it is. When I was married to her father, I was more in love with my career than I was with him, and he knew it. Success is heady stuff. I have no regrets, though, and we wound up friends. My only regret is that married asshole who lied to me and I should never have gotten involved with. Probably the only man I've ever really loved is my first husband. I was married to him when I was barely older than Salima, and widowed when I was 23. He was a cameraman for CNN and got killed by a sniper. After that, all I cared about was my career. It didn't hurt as much as loving a person. People die, they cheat, they lie, they disappoint you. And work is just work. That's a very solitary way to live, he said, looking sympathetic. My parents are still in love with each other, and they've been married for 35 years. They're kind of cute together, although my mom is pretty nuts and says whatever comes into her head. It used to embarrass the hell out of me when I was a kid. She's outrageous, but he loves it. It was a little dicier as their kid, and not quite as charming. Blaze smiled at his description of his parents. They sounded interesting to her. My parents were pretty ordinary. My father was a butcher. My mother was a teacher. They had a strong work ethic and good values. My father always told me work was everything, and to do something I loved. I got the message. But they didn't say much about loving people. I was their only child, and they were both killed in a car accident when I was in college. They left me a life insurance policy that got me through school, and after that I was on my own. I grew up in Seattle, and I started in news there as a weather girl, she said with a grin. It was a stupid job, but it got me in. And after that it was San Francisco and New York, and now here I am, trying to cover my ass every day. They don't tell you that in the beginning. It must be in the small print in the contract. You make me feel like I should be doing more, he said honestly. I've taken the easy road till now, and took a job I could do without too much challenge. By the time you were my age, you were a big star, had been married twice, and had a kid. Not bad, he said admiringly. She had come a long, long way from being a butcher's daughter in Seattle, and he had had an easier start. His father had a prestigious job in the academic world. His mother had money, and they were still alive and married. He wondered if that was the difference. Maybe he'd had it too easy. His family had always been behind him. Blaze only had herself. It's not too late, she reminded him with a wry grin. You're still a kid. 32 is not a kid, he said seriously, but he looked like one to her at times. And she was 15 years older, and they had been action-packed years. That's why I got out of it with the married woman. I don't want to waste the next 15 years waiting for someone else to get their life together while they screw up mine. I finally had to think of myself. So will you stay at Caldwell? Blaze asked him, curious about him as a person now. I don't know, maybe not. I want to send some applications around to other schools while I'm here, bigger ones, preferably one in a city where I'll have a fuller life. And I don't want to fall into the same trap again with her if I go back to Caldwell after this year. I have to go back when they reopen to honor my contract, but after that, I don't know. I think you're capable of more, she said, and he was touched that she thought so. He had a lot of respect for her. More so now that he had seen her at home, what she stood for and what she did, and the toll it took on her. She was the first to admit that she hadn't been present enough for Salima, but she was an honest, honorable person. Thank you. At least I'd like to try, Simon said, about doing more with his life. Otherwise I'll never know. I don't need to be a star, or even want to be. I just need to be the best I can be at what I do. He looked very earnest as he said it. From what I can see so far, you are the best. Eric said so. Give yourself a break. What you do is very noble. And if you want to, you'll find a better job. You have everything you need, the credentials, the talent, the motivation, the gift. What you do for others is a gift. Salima had begun to blossom in just 2 days, and she could see the difference now between Abby protecting her and holding her back, and Simon inspiring her to do more with herself. And he was kind to Blaze, too. They chatted for a few more minutes, and then Blaze stood up and said she had to go to bed. She had to get up in an hour, and he apologized for keeping her up. It was worth it, she said in a gentle tone. Sometimes I get scared at night when I think about my life. All I see are the mistakes in the past and the dangers up ahead. We all do, he said gently. Don't be so hard on yourself. One of the things she was coming to like about him was that he wasn't impressed by who she was. He respected her and thought she'd had an amazing career, but he wasn't dazzled by the tinsel. He understood who Blaze was, and just like her, he was real. They both knew that was rare. Simon treated her as though she were an ordinary, normal person, not a star. No one had done that in years. Good night, Simon, she said, and waved from the doorway. You don't have to get my coffee ready in the morning. Get some sleep. It was more than she would be able to do, having to get up in an hour. But he could sleep in till Salima got up. Someone has to take care of you, he said seriously. From what I can see, no one else does. You take care of everyone else, or at least you're responsible for them. He was the first person who had noticed it in years, maybe ever. And he was right. No one took care of her, and no one ever had. She was a fighter and a survivor, used to doing everything on her own. At least I can provide hot coffee and some decent dinners while I'm here. It's not much, but it's something. It's a lot, she said. Thank you. Good night. She closed the kitchen door, and he went back to his room. And she went back to hers, after she checked on Salima, feeling like she'd found a friend. It was a nice thing to have. Chapter 7. With all the pressures and tension at the network, finding a music teacher for Salima had slipped Blaze's mind. She and Simon were singing together almost every night, and Salima was having fun. But Mark hadn't dropped the ball on the project, even if Blaze had. A week after she'd made the request, he put a memo on her desk for her to find after her morning segment. There were three names with phone numbers and emails, two women, one man, two from LaGuardia High School of Music and Art and Performing Arts, and one from Juilliard. His memo said he had spoken to all of them, and Blaze wandered out to his desk to discuss it with him. "So who do you like best?" she asked, impressed with his thorough research. Salima was going to be thrilled. "The one from Juilliard, hands down. The others sounded good, but the woman from Juilliard was more appealing. A little wacky, maybe, but she was excited to work with Salima even though she's blind. I thought the other two might be more nervous about it, although I could be wrong. And all three come from great schools." "Follow your gut," Blaze said without hesitation. "Call her. Ask her to come to the house so Salima can check her out. She has to like her, too." "No problem." And half an hour later, there was a follow-up note on her desk with the teacher's name and a time for an appointment the next day with Salima at the apartment. And of course, Simon would be there, too. It was set for the time Blaze usually came home from work. The following day, Blaze had only just come through the door 5 minutes before and was talking to Salima when the doorman called to announce their guest. It was the Juilliard teacher, Luciana Goldstein. Mark had already told her that she was an Italian woman married to an American, hence the name. And when she came through the door 5 minutes later, while Blaze was still taking off her coat, the woman was as incongruous as her name. She had a wide, welcoming smile, bright blue eyes, and a mellifluous voice, and a head full of shining gold curls. She had a large, generous body, an enormous bosom, and tiny, spindly legs. She wore lots of bangle bracelets, too much perfume, dangling hoop earrings, and enormously high stiletto heels. And to top it all off, a hat with flowers on it that moved, which she carefully removed as soon as she entered the apartment and set down on the hall table as Blaze stared at it in fascination. It looked like a garden with tiny living things on it. There were so many different component parts to her outfit that Blaze didn't know where to look, and she was sorry that Salima wouldn't be able to share this vision. But the most noticeable thing about Luciana was her voice. It was smooth as silk. And her eyes were the most brilliant blue she had ever seen, as she looked at Blaze warmly. "Oh my," Luciana said with a smile that showed off perfect teeth. "You're older than I thought you would be." She looked straight at Blaze. "But that's all right. It's never too late to learn to sing." She had a lovely accent, and Simon was grinning. The teacher thought Blaze was Salima, and she was quick to explain as Salima arrived in the front hall having heard the doorbell. She was listening intently and wrinkled her nose at the perfume that assaulted her as soon as she joined them. "This is Salima, your prospective student," Blaze explained. "Won't you come in?" She offered Luciana a cup of tea as they walked into the living room, but she declined. Then she noticed the grand piano. It was a Steinway, and she approved. She seemed a little nervous with Salima, and even more so around Blaze. She knew exactly who they were, and had told Mark she didn't know that Blaze McCarthy had a blind daughter. And he told her that there would be a confidentiality agreement to sign if she was hired. It was standard fare in Blaze's life. And the teacher had no problem with the agreement. She mentioned that she'd never had a blind student before. They chatted for a few minutes, as Luciana perched on the couch, and Salima mostly listened. She could hear that the woman was nervous, and Luciana told them she had studied opera in Milan. She rattled off the various opera companies she had worked for all over Europe, and now she had been in the States for 18 years and with Juilliard for 15. She told Salima that if she was serious about a music career, she should apply. But for now, all Salima wanted were some lessons, and after half an hour of introductions, Luciana asked her to sing. Simon had agreed to accompany her on the piano, and Salima took her place next to him. She was glad that he was there, and she asked Luciana what she'd like to hear. She said she didn't know any opera, but she knew show tunes, contemporary music, and gospel hymns. Diplomatically, Luciana suggested one of each. She started with a song from Mamma Mia, went on to Les Miserables, and finished with a gospel song that Blaise loved whenever she sang it. Her high notes were so high, they sounded as if they could shatter glass, and she hit them with ease. She went through the three songs easily, and Luciana stared at her when she was finished. "Did you warm up before I came?" she asked, looking worried. "No, I didn't. No one told me what time you'd be here," which was why she was wearing sweatpants and socks instead of at least jeans and shoes. "You'll ruin your voice if you do that," the ample Italian woman warned her. "You must never sing without warming up first. And the gospel song. Can you always hit those high notes?" Selima said she could, with a grin. Luciana looked at her then with tears in her eyes. "Do you realize how lucky you are? What a gift you have. People train for years and can't hit notes like that. You just soar right through it like a bird in the sky," she said, and dabbed at her eyes. "What I could have done with a voice like yours." She had explained that she was from Venice originally, although she had lived in Milan while she trained and studied. She asked Selima if she had any interest in opera, and Selima said she didn't. She wanted to enjoy what she sang. It was mostly fun for her. "You should really be in school," she said. "This is very naughty of you, to treat your voice like a toy. It's not a plaything, it's a gift." She was a very funny woman, and Blaise thought she looked like a character of herself with her enormous body, skinny legs, and tiny feet and high heels. And she had gentle, loving eyes. Simon was watching her in fascination, and Selima was listening to her raptly. "Would you be willing to take my daughter on as a student?" Blaise finally asked her bluntly, as everyone else beat around the bush. "Of course," she said with a wide smile that was wasted on Selima, but she reached out and touched her hand. "I would love to. It would be an honor. But I will expect you to work very hard," she admonished Selima. "How many times would you like to meet?" Blaise asked her, and was startled when she said 3 times a week. "Is that too much?" Blaise asked with a look of concern. It seemed like a lot to her. "Not if she's serious about singing," Luciana answered. "If she had less of a voice, I'd say 1 or 2 a week. But if we want results, and to train her voice properly, it should be 3 or even 4 times a week. We can start with 3 and see how she does." "What do you think, Selima?" Blaise didn't want to leave her out of the decision and treat her like a child. "How many times a week would you want singing lessons?" "Every day," Selima said, grinning. And Luciana looked thrilled. She looked like she had discovered gold that afternoon, or a diamond on the street. They set their first meeting for the following afternoon, and Luciana kissed Selima's cheek and reminded her to keep her neck warm at all times and wear a scarf. She put her hat back on, shook hands with Blaise and Simon, and a moment later she was gone as they all stared at each other and began to laugh. She was a sweet woman, even if she looked a little like a clown. That had only occurred to Blaise once they sat down. "She smells awful, but I like her," Selima was the first to comment. "You should see what she looks like," Blaise added with a smile. But she liked her too. There was something very warm and lovable about her. Simon agreed that she was nice, and her credentials were excellent if she taught at Juilliard, and whatever happened, he thought it would be something fun for Selima to do. She was excited and talked about it all through dinner. Simon was cooking for them every night now. He tried to keep it light for Blaise, but occasionally showed off with some of his fancier dishes. They were all superb, and it added a festive feeling to the evenings. Blaise found herself looking forward to their dinners together, and it was nice having someone ask her how her day was, and he looked as though he cared. Ever since their conversation about what she dealt with at the network, he had had even more respect for her and sympathy when she came home. And Selima was adjusting to Simon, too. They had occasional arguments about how to spend their time. He had suggestions for every day, and he thought everything they did should have some educational value. but he also made her negotiate the post office, the pharmacy, the grocery store, the dry cleaner, the bank. And he forced her to take public transportation instead of cabs. She insisted that her mother preferred that she take taxis, but he didn't care. He was trying to teach her everything that he considered useful to her while he was there. He even made her put the groceries away, and complained when she did it out of order and he found cottage cheese in the cupboard and pasta in the fridge. He expected her to get it right, and occasionally he was a hard taskmaster. But whenever he was, and she accomplished the task he had set before her, she felt great about herself. Blaze was watching her grow more self-confident every day, and he still wanted to work on her about getting a seeing-eye dog. He thought that with a dog she could go to school alone. He didn't think she needed a caretaker all the time, and the thought of that panicked Blaze when he talked to her about it, and she told him to slow down. "I have a fantastic opportunity with her while we're here," he explained. "I want her to gain as much ground as she can before she goes back to Caldwell," he told her mother. And Blaze pointed out to him that he was moving ahead at jet speed, and so was Salima. She loaded and unloaded the dishwasher now with ease, and even helped him with the cooking. He had shown her how to make an omelet on her own, and it was good. She had surprised her mother with one on Sunday morning. They were definitely on a crash course toward success, and once her music lesson started, Salima was ecstatic. Some of what she had to do was boring, like scales, but the rest of the time she had a ball, and Luciana also let her play with her voice. She loved to hear her sing, and once in a while they sang duets that were exquisite. Luciana had a beautiful soprano voice, and when their voices blended, it sounded like angels singing. Sometimes it brought Blaze to tears to hear them, and Simon was deeply moved. Salima had a powerful voice, and it was growing stronger with the lessons. He could hear the difference within weeks, and on the weekends, when she didn't have work to catch up on, Blaze joined Simon and Salima on their outings. Even when she brought work home, she would stop what she was doing and go out with them for a while. They went to movies, stores, museums that had tactile exhibits, and a performance of La Traviata at the Met. Simon was using all the wonders of New York to educate and entertain her, and little by little, he was making her more independent. He was constantly asking her to help him with chores or on the computer, and he asked her to do her own laundry, and she refused. She said her mother didn't either, and he laughed. She had a point, and maybe Salima would never have to, so he gave up on that. It was also a huge relief to Blaze that enough time had passed. Salima hadn't come down with meningitis and was healthy. She had discussed it with their doctor, and the incubation period had passed. The school was staying closed for longer, but the risk of illness was at least not still a concern. All of them were busy. Simon with Salima, Salima with the things he asked her to do, and especially her singing lessons, which were time-consuming too, and Luciana gave her homework. And Blaze was constantly swamped at work and trying to prove something to the boys upstairs. Zack was still breathing down her neck, and Susie Quentin got more ambitious every day. She wanted Charlie to give her more specials, and she was obviously jealous of Blaze. She wanted to show everyone what she could do. Zack played along with her with an idea that was typical of the entertainment division he had come from and unheard of in news. After a long meeting with Susie, he suggested she do a live interview with the First Lady in January. It would be a first. He thought it would be a great coup to establish Susie as a valid alternative to Blaze, since all of her specials and interviews were taped. He said a live interview with the First Lady would be fresh and exciting. And Susie came out of the meeting with stars in her eyes. She confided to several people that she was sure she'd be even more important at the network than Blaze after that. Charlie had a quiet meeting with Zack as soon as he heard about it, trying to explain that a live interview with the First Lady was fraught with risk. It was traditional and much safer to have it taped, as Blaze always did. Zack was quick to brush him off. "We're through with traditions around here," Zack said, looking irritated. "We need new blood, new people, new ideas. We're going live, and Susie's just the one to do it. Charlie hoped he was right, and broke the news to Blaze himself before she heard it from someone else. "Is he crazy? What if something goes wrong? If the First Lady says something she shouldn't?" They both knew that happened. "She'll never do it live." But much to everyone's amazement, her press secretary agreed to it. Susie had won the Plum of the Year, and Blaze felt like she'd been left in the dust. She would never have dared to suggest a live interview with the wife of a sitting president, or anyone else of that magnitude. Her subjects were far more comfortable knowing they were being taped, in case anything went wrong. It was Zack's idea, but Susie was unlivable. She was so full of herself after it was announced. Zack had created a monster, and Blaze had to live with it every day. Mark felt sorry for her, and she talked to Simon about it several times at night. He was shocked at the abuse she had to take and the stress she was under, and he admired her immensely for her grace and poise and strength. Although to him she readily confessed that she had an overwhelming urge to strangle Susie every time she saw her, and he didn't blame her a bit. In the weeks he'd been in New York with them, Simon had somehow become her confidant. He was smart, interested, and there every night. Blaze was surprised at the things she told him, how much she trusted him, and valued his opinions and advice about her life. And he was equally open with her about his own. He confessed the secrets of his childhood, his fears about his life and if he'd ever make something of himself, his regrets about Megan and the unhappy relationship he'd fallen into with her. And they talked about Salima a lot, and Blaze's dreams for her. She wanted her to find a career path that was meaningful to her. It was the same advice her father had given her at the same age. Blaze wanted her to have a job she loved, to give meaning to her life. The rest would fall into place after that. Simon respected Blaze enormously for the things she said, and despite the times she knew she hadn't been there for her, Simon admired the kind of mother she was. Her heart was in the right place. And living under one roof, Blaze's relationship with Salima was flourishing. Both Simon and Blaze were surprised by the multitude of subjects they discussed, sometimes until very late at night, and neither of them felt the difference in their ages. They were just two people who'd become friends and respected each other and liked each other better every day. Both of them took pride in Salima's progress. Thanks to Simon, she was more independent than she ever had been. She had learned how to do countless new things, and she was much more willing to go out into the world. But she still refused to use a cane or talk about a dog. She was perfectly happy being with him. "But what if I'm not here one day? If you're a famous singer on a concert tour, you think I'm going to do that with you?" He teased her to make the point. "You'd better," she shouted at him, and gave him a playful shove. She was totally comfortable with him now, too. He was like the big brother she'd never had. "That's your job," she reminded him. "What? Follow some crazy rock star around while you sign autographs and keep me up all night fighting off your fans? Hell no. I'm going back to Massachusetts to live out my life in peace." "You'd be bored to death now after New York," Salima said to him. And what she said was truer than she knew. He had been thinking that himself. He was having a ball in New York. And he loved spending time with Salima and Blaze. It no longer felt like a job to him after he'd been there for a while. It had begun to feel like home, and they had a lot of fun together. His time with them had turned out to be none of what he expected, and when Eric called to check on him again, he told him so. "Well, don't wind up staying there with them," Eric said mournfully, well aware that Blaze could afford to pay him far more than the school and might steal him from them. "I'm expecting you back when we reopen in January," Eric reminded him, but it seemed like a long way off. And Simon knew he had a contract with them that he had to honor until May. But in the meantime, he was thoroughly enjoying New York and everything it offered, and their dinners together every night felt like family. He loved his long conversations with Blaze. Blaze was helping him clear the table one night and loaded the dishwasher with him, while Salima had a lesson with Luciana later than usual, and Blaze was complaining about the network again. She couldn't stand Zack Austin as her boss, and the trouble and angst he created for her every chance he got. Susie's upcoming live interview still stuck in her throat, and the unpleasant, supercilious way Zack spoke to her sometimes made her want to quit. With his propensity for firing people without warning, she was tired of living with a sword over her head all the time. The tension he created around him was palpable, and not the way she wanted to work. Sometimes, I feel like if I blink for a minute, someone will knife me in the back and I'll be gone. I just don't want to live like that anymore, no matter how much they pay me. I want to be treated like a human being. As she said it, she reached past him to take a plate out of the sink and brushed very close to him. She could feel his warmth, and without thinking, he gently touched her cheek with his hand. He had never wanted to do that before, and she felt a current of electricity run through her. She looked up at him, and as their eyes met, she completely forgot what she'd been saying, and so did he. He had felt it too. He didn't know if he should apologize or ignore it, and Blaze went back to loading the dishwasher as though nothing had happened, so he took his cue from her. But it had been an odd feeling wanting to touch her, and he couldn't stop himself. Blaze had noticed more and more recently that the age difference between them didn't seem to exist. She looked up to him as a man, and shared many of his values and opinions, and he thought of her as a woman his own age. It had been so long since she'd had a man to share her thoughts with, and it suddenly seemed normal to talk to him about everything. He made so much sense, and he loved the absence of drama in her life. For 3 years, every day had been a roller coaster with Megan, as they hid from her abusive alcoholic husband, which had begun to seem normal to Simon. With Blaze, he felt sane again. The 15 years between them didn't matter anymore. It was an odd but endearing friendship for both of them, which crossed the boundaries of her being his employer and the difference in their age. She never mentioned how much time they spent together to anyone, or how impressed she was with him. All she ever said was what a terrific job he was doing with Salima, and she had said it to Mark several times. She never said anything else about him, and all Mark knew was that Abby's replacement was working out well. Blaze was on an all-day trip to Washington to interview a freshman senator who was making noise about running for president when she realized she had forgotten some papers at the office that she would need when she got back that night, and she called Mark to have him drop them off at her apartment on his way home. "I'm sorry to do that to you," she apologized. "I was so tired when I left yesterday that I didn't even notice they weren't in my briefcase till I got on the plane today." "Don't worry about it. I'll take a cab and drop them off after work. Can I leave them with the doorman?" "They're a little sensitive. There's a report on the senator who just got outed for having an affair with a 14-year-old. Do you mind leaving them with Simon?" "Sure, no problem." And it would give him a chance to see Salima, which he hadn't done since she got home. He hadn't seen her in a year. They only talked on the phone, and he was one of her biggest fans. Mark rang the doorbell when he got there, and he had the cab waiting downstairs. The papers Blaze wanted were in an envelope marked confidential. A man opened the door. Mark found himself looking at a tall, handsome man with his shirt sleeves rolled up. He was wearing jeans and cowboy boots and had dark, tousled hair. Simon looked at Mark and immediately guessed who he was. He matched Blaze's description of him to perfection. Short, bald, and slight, he looked like a bundle of nerves, and he was wearing a blazer and an Hermes tie. He dressed for work every day, and Mark thought Simon looked like a movie star. It was tall, dark, and sexy, and suddenly Mark wondered if there was more going on with him and Blaze than what she said. "I'm Simon," he said, holding out a hand to Blaze's assistant with a broad smile. "Come on in. I'm sure Salima would love to see you. She talks about you all the time." Mark could hear her singing in the background. She was having her lesson with Luciana. "I don't want to disturb her," Mark said, looking nervous, just as Blaze had said he would. He handed Simon the envelope and quickly moved toward the elevator and rang. Simon looked disappointed, and as though he were afraid he had said something to offend him. He hadn't, but Mark had been so totally unprepared for his looks and the aura about him, and the ease Simon obviously felt in her home, that he was embarrassed to come in. The elevator was there in an instant, and with a wave and a smile, he was gone. "Faster than the speed of sound," Simon said to himself, closed the front door, and went to put the envelope on Blaze's desk. She found it there when she got home, and she asked Simon about it when she had a cup of tea with him in the kitchen. Salima had already gone to bed after a long, exhausting lesson. Luciana was demanding a lot from her, but she loved it. "Did you meet Mark today? He's such a nice guy. He's the best assistant I've ever had. I hope he stays forever." "I did meet him," Simon confirmed with a puzzled look, "for about 14 seconds. I was afraid I did something to upset him. I shook his hand, he looked panicked, and then he rang for the elevator and left." "He's like a hummingbird," she said, the perfect description of the man he'd met. "He's always in motion, and I told you he's very nervous, but he gets everything I need done." Simon already knew how much she relied on him, and had been looking forward to meeting him. They had spoken many times on the phone. "I hope I didn't insult him in some way." "That's just him," she said, looking unconcerned, and then told Simon about the meeting in Washington that day. With her open, winning way, she had gotten the senator to admit he wanted to be president before he was 39 years old, which was a major coup. It was going to shoot the ratings through the roof. "Just as you always do," Simon said, proud of her, as Blaze thought how nice it was to have someone to talk to about her day. Mark mentioned the meeting with Simon the next day, too, and he looked awkward when he spoke of it to Blaze. "You should have said something to me and warned me," Mark chided her. "The door opened, and this hunk stood there smiling at me and held out his hand." "What was he supposed to do?" Blaze laughed at him. "Grab the envelope and slam the door in your face?" "I had no idea he looked like that, Blaze. He looks like a movie star." And then he couldn't resist asking her the question that had been on his mind all night. They had a good relationship, and she was always honest with him, unless it was something confidential she couldn't tell him or didn't want him to know. He wondered if this might be one of those. "Are you in love with him?" She looked shocked when he asked the question, that he could have thought that, and she shook her head with a baffled look. "Why would you think that? Did Simon say something inappropriate?" If so, she was going to talk to him about it, but it didn't sound like Simon. He was polite and discreet and always very correct with her, even though they'd become friends. Their developing friendship had been unexpected, but went no further than that. He had never been presumptuous or out of line with her. There had been that odd moment once at the kitchen sink, but they'd both brushed it aside, and it hadn't happened again. "It wasn't anything he said," Mark corrected the impression immediately to justifiably absolve Simon. "It's what he looks like, and how comfortable he seems in your space. He's right at home." "Obviously. He's living there with us. You get pretty friendly when you see each other over breakfast and dinner every day, and run into each other in the kitchen at midnight over a cup of hot milk. If anything, we're becoming friends. But I'm certainly not in love with him. And besides, he's 15 years younger than I am. He's much more likely to fall for Salima than me. And there's no sign of that either." She sounded relieved. "Well, if you're not in love with him, you should be," Mark said ruefully. "He's the best-looking guy I've ever seen, and he doesn't look his age. He looks older, and you seem like a kid. You two probably look good together. You don't look a day older than he does." "Are you angling for a raise?" she teased him, but she was surprised by what he'd said. There had been no hint of romance between them, nor would there be. They would never be more than friends. "I'm sorry, I just had to ask the question. Maybe it was wishful thinking. I was a little shocked at first, but when I think of the raw deal you got from Andrew Wayland, I wish you'd end up with a guy like Simon. You say he's a great guy and smart, and he's fabulous looking. You deserve a prize after all the shit you've been through. And look at your ex-husband. Harry goes out with girls nearly 50 years younger than he is. What's a mere 15? "That's different. He's a man. It's acceptable when men go out with young girls. If women do it, people call them names. They're just jealous. If the opportunity arises, go for it. That's all I have to say." She was totally amazed by everything he'd said, and she said nothing about it to Simon that night. It would have been too embarrassing, and he probably would have thought she was crazy and trying to put a move on him. Besides, she could tell he was still suffering over Megan. For 1,000 reasons, Mark's fantasy was never going to happen. but it was interesting to hear. In the avalanche of stresses and challenges she dealt with every day, thanks to Zack, Susie, and a host of others, she forgot all about Mark's comments until the following weekend, when Simon was helping her clean out a closet to make more room for Salima's things. Blaze still had all the toys she used to play with, and she wanted to get rid of them now to give her more space. She was on top of a ladder and teetering dangerously when she stretched too far in one direction, and Simon reached out to grab her and steady her, with a firm grasp around her waist, and he kept it there until she stepped down. As she came down the ladder, she stopped when she was eye to eye with him, and the world seemed to stand still around them. Neither of them said a word, but Blaze felt the same electric current run through her that had happened once before at the sink. She tried to tell herself it was her imagination, but this time she knew it wasn't. And Simon didn't take his eyes off hers, nor his hands from around her waist. She could feel him there, and for an instant she felt herself moving closer to him, and then he shifted his gaze and helped her the rest of the way down the ladder. She had no idea what had just happened, and she was afraid to ask him. Maybe nothing had, and as she put all the old toys in boxes, she told herself she had imagined it. It was nothing. But a little voice inside her said something different, and when she looked at Simon, his eyes were guarded and he was busy. They both pretended not to notice, and everything was back to normal when he cooked dinner that night. Salima had requested homemade pizza, and the ones he made were delicious, with a huge salad. He had baked apple crumble for dessert, made with sugar substitutes for Salima's diet. He served it with homemade dietetic vanilla ice cream. He was a genius at making the foods she could eat and making them taste great. And as they chatted and joked after dinner, Blaze realized again how close they'd gotten, and how at ease they were with each other. And she remembered the moment in the closet that afternoon, and the question Mark had asked her earlier in the week, about being in love with him. She didn't think she was, but maybe those two moments that felt like an electric current running through her had been some kind of fantasy of her own. And if that was true, it made her feel like an old fool, and maybe she was. Mark was right, he was very handsome. But she saw much more than that in Simon now. She saw the person he was, the kind heart, the good values, the honesty. It was his qualities she liked so much, not his looks. That was just icing on the cake. And it was a cake she didn't plan to eat anyway. As though to remind her of it, Megan called him when he was sitting in the kitchen with her that night, after Salima went to her room to use her computer and write to a friend from school. They communicated through Facebook, and Salima had a lot of fun with it. Thanks to the programs on her computer, she could do Facebook like anyone else, and she loved it. Blaze could tell instantly from the look on Simon's face who the call was from. He hadn't been answering Megan's emails, but he had told Blaze that once in a while he took her calls, usually late at night when he was in bed and thinking about her anyway. He admitted that he missed her, and what he said about her sometimes reminded Blaze of how she had felt about Andrew Wayland at first, when she missed him so terribly, but knew she had done the right thing to break up with him. She had never doubted it, but she missed him anyway, and her illusions about him. Simon looked pained the moment he took the call, and disappeared to his room with his cell phone in his hand, while Blaze sat quietly in the kitchen, thinking about that afternoon and what it meant. She was sure it was nothing. Just a moment between two people who were alone. But they weren't going to wind up with each other because of it. And Blaze wondered if he'd go back to Megan when they both went back to school. The pull between them seemed to be strong. He came back 5 minutes later with an apologetic look. "Sorry. I told her she has to stop calling me. She calls every time he slaps her around. It drives me nuts. It's why she wanted to leave him in the first place. I told her to go to Al-Anon, and she won't." "It's okay," Blaze said reassuringly. "You don't owe me any explanations." She could see how upset he was by the call. She wasn't sure if that meant he still loved her, or was trying to escape and having a hard time. And Megan didn't make it any easier by calling him all the time, just as Andrew had done. Megan was hanging on to him for dear life, but not dear enough to leave her husband. "I won't take her calls anymore," he said as much to himself as to her. "Don't feel bad," she said with a sympathetic look. "I still take Andrew's calls sometimes, 4 years later, although I'm always sorry when I do. It's just an echo of old times, and not a good one for me." But she knew it was different for him with Megan. Their relationship was more recent, and the pain still very fresh. "I think she loves me, or she says she does," Simon said with a troubled look. "The problem is she loves him, too, even if she won't admit it to me. If she didn't, she wouldn't still be with him after 3 years with me. Maybe she loves him more." He was still trying to sort it out, although he felt better since he'd come to New York and had some distance from her and her troubled life. "Or history and kids," Blaze said sensibly. "It's hard to know why people stay together. Andrew has cheated on his wife for years, and probably always will. And she puts up with it. And I'm sure they'll never leave each other. They like the fantasy of their marriage, but there's not much there. Some people are willing to settle for that." "That's not enough for me," Simon said, looking anguished. "I want the real deal, or I'd rather be alone." "Yeah. Beware of what you wish for. That's what I said. And now look at me. I'm alone, and probably always will be. At your age, you have lots of relationships ahead of you." It made her sad to think about it, that her romantic life might well be over. It certainly looked that way. And in a lot of ways, she had made her peace with it, and told herself she didn't have time anyway. Who could handle a relationship when you had a career like hers? She had neither the time nor the energy. Her life with the network was all-consuming, just as Harry had said. And nothing had changed. For one shining moment, she had believed in what she shared with Andrew, and he had made a mockery of it. It didn't make her want to try again. "I told Megan I was happy here," Simon interrupted her train of thought. "It's true. I'd really like to find a job in New York for next year." He sounded hopeful as he said it. "Then start looking," Blaze encouraged him. "There's some excellent schools for the blind here. You should fill out some applications and take a look at the schools while you're in New York. You can even take Salima with you." Blaze had no intention of keeping her in New York once Caldwell opened again, and Salima had never asked to stay at home. She knew it wasn't an option. But it was clear that Simon wanted a chance at something new, and Blaze thought it would be good for him. They spent an easy, quiet weekend, and on Sunday night she flew to L.A. Pat Olden, the congressman who'd been shot at UCLA, had died without regaining consciousness. Blaze wanted to attend his funeral and pay her respects, and then she was interviewing the head of the university on Monday afternoon. Afterward, she was filming a special with a hot new movie star on Tuesday and returning Tuesday night. Simon had promised her he'd take care of everything, and she kissed them both goodbye when she left. "Call me if anything comes up," she said to Simon as he carried her bag to the elevator for her. "You know I will. We'll be fine." He smiled at her, and in the flash of an instant, she thought she saw something in his eyes that she had seen twice before. And then it was gone. And there was no doubt in her mind. She had imagined it. Mark was crazy. She was sure of it. She and Simon were just friends, and it was enough for both of them. Chapter 8. Pat Olden's funeral was as heart-wrenching as Blaze had expected it to be. He had been shot down in the prime of life, at 43, with a wife who loved him, a great career, and 4 terrific kids. Who knew? He might have been president one day. It was all so unfair, Blaze thought to herself. The First Lady had spoken, and the president had sent a message to Pat's family because he couldn't be there. And Pat's wife and children were devastated. The death toll from that day had reached 18, including the shooter. It was tragic. Her interview with the president of the university that afternoon went extremely well. It was a serious conversation about the dangers to young people today, and a certain hopelessness in youth around the world due to the economy, the environment, and the opportunities that had dwindled for them in recent years. It was a strong message to parents everywhere to pay attention to their kids. And the next day she spent with the young movie star, which was a welcome counterpoint to her serious interview the day before. The star was outrageous, sexy, and full of fun, and had just won a Golden Globe at 21. Blaze had asked her every question she'd dared, and the girl had answered them all and had volunteered some shocking information of her own. It was the kind of interview Blaze loved to do sometimes, to break the monotony of the more sober ones, and she had nailed this one easily. It was light-hearted, sexy, and the subject was outspoken and ingenuous. Blaze was pleased when she flew back to New York on the red-eye and fell asleep on the plane. Tully was there to meet her, and she went straight to work from the airport, just in time to do her segment. And as soon as she got to her office afterward, Simon called her to tell her everything was fine and had gone smoothly while she was away. She hadn't had time to call them while she was rushing for the red-eye the night before. "Are you exhausted?" He sounded concerned. The schedule she lived would have killed anyone, but she seemed to thrive on it, and she sounded happy about the interviews she taped in L.A. "No, I'm fine. I slept on the plane, although that L.A. red-eye is always just a little too short. It's better going to Europe." That was a 7-hour flight, compared to 5.5 from the West Coast, which was cutting it a little close for a good night's rest, even for her, and the first-class seats didn't turn into beds. She knew the configuration of every plane that flew. And to make matters worse, she had to stay late at work that night for a meeting. But for once, there were no bad surprises, although it annoyed her to see Susie Quentin at the meeting. She was on top of the world, and they were sending her to Paris to do a special on French fashion, attend the haute couture shows, and interview the French president's wife. All plums, although the fashion show would have been a little lightweight for Blaze. She didn't come home until 8 o'clock. Salima was in her room on the phone, having already eaten. Simon had dinner waiting for her, and he gave her a hug when she walked in. It was nice to see his smiling face and know that someone was happy to see her. It was new for her, and he held her close to him for a minute and looked at her. "I'm glad you're back," he said in a gruff voice. "I worry about you." He was still holding her and hadn't let go. "It's nice to know that someone does." "I worry about you, too," she said, and realized it was true. And she always worried about Salima. So much could go wrong with her health. But Simon had everything in good control, and she felt confident knowing Salima was with him. And Teresa, the housekeeper, had stayed there, too, while she was gone, but had left that afternoon. She told Simon all about what she'd done in L.A. over dinner, Patrick Olden's funeral, the interview with the university president, and the one with the young movie star. The diversity of subjects was typical of her life and what made it fun for her. He could see she'd enjoyed the day with the young actress. He liked learning about it and seeing the excitement in her eyes. Even after sharing her life and hearing her stories for a while, he was fascinated by it. She talked about people he had only read about before, and they were commonplace to her. The exceptional was part of her routine. "I love knowing about what you do," he said, smiling at her. But he knew the flip side of the coin now, too, all the rigors that went with it. It was far from easy, but she loved the challenge and rose to it every time. They chatted for a while, and Blaze finally got up from the table and said she wanted to take a bath and go to bed. She was tired. She stopped in to say goodnight to Salima, gave her a kiss, and went to her own room. It felt good to be home, particularly with someone to talk to at the end of the day, or when she came home from a trip. With Simon and Salima there, dinner together every night, and all their comings and goings, the apartment felt like a home, for the first time since she had moved in. It was a different world, with Salima singing with Luciana, and wandering around the apartment, and Simon cooking dinner every night. She was enjoying it so much that for the first time ever, she hated to leave home and go to work. Whether he had intended to or not, Simon had given new meaning to their life.